भगवान कृष्ण इन द गीता सेज, तो भगवान सेज लिफ्ट योर सेल्फ बाई योर सेल्फ, नो वन एल्स कैन डू इट फॉर यू, यू हैव टू लिफ्ट योर सेल्फ बाई योर सेल्फ एंड हैविंग रिजन डू नॉट फॉल बैक डाउन, एंड यू आर योर ओन बेस्ट फ्रेंड एंड यू आर योर ओन वर्स्ट एनिमी. सो ही हैज गिवन द रिस्पॉन्सिबिलिटी ऑफ आवर लाइफ टू आवर सेल्फ. नो वन कैन run our life for us, neither our parents nor our spouse, our children, our boss, the society, the economy. I am responsible for my own life. And last week we had studied about the ladder of fall, how we fall, and that's a very, very important two verses where the Lord says that one who gets attached to sense objects, when he thinks about sense objects, he gets attached. With attachment comes delusion. With delusion, loss of memory. We forget whatever we have heard, and then we get angry, and then there is loss of discrimination and pranashyati. Such a person perishes. So this makes us realize how beautiful this knowledge is. 5,000 or more, 7,000-8,000 years ago, this knowledge that was given to us is so valid today, every verse. So, and people always say, Vedanta doesn't seem to be practical. You need to tell us what is practical. What is practical? If I practice, it is practical. If I don't, it remains theory. Just as learning to ride a bike, I may read about it, I may see videos, but unless I myself get on a bike, ride and fall and hurt my knee and again get up, then and then alone I'll become an accomplished bicycle rider. All of us have done that in our childhood. So similarly, on the spiritual path, we have to be very careful, because there will be, the mind will take us away. And the sense organs will take us away. That's what Bhagavan says. That be very alert, alert living. And even if you do fall or you do not progress as much as you need to, you should get back up and get back on the journey. So this is what we have studied so far about Dama and Shama. Dama is control of the senses and Shama is control of the mind. And both are required. So this topic is continuing today, talking about what is the benefit of this knowledge, why should I practice this knowledge, what will I get out of it. So the verse number 64 and 65 tell us the benefit of this knowledge. And then 66 tells us what happens if we don't practice. So that's what the Bhagavad Gita throughout, the Lord, he always will say, if you do this, you will get this benefit. If you don't do this, this will be your loss. The choice is yours. So today also, we have very clear choice. So we'll start with verse number 64. Chapter 2, verse number 64. Raga dvesha viyuktaistu. Vishayanindriyaischaran Atma Vashyair Vidheyatma Prasadam Adhigacchati. So Raga and Dvesha. Raga and Dvesha is likes and dislikes. But not simple likes and dislikes, what we call as intense, brooding, longing. I must have it. If I don't, then. So Raga Dvesha is not simple. I like this, I don't like this. Like, you know, I like idli sambar and I don't like Chinese food. Not like that. But intense likes and dislikes, that is called Raga Dvesha. Viyukta. Yukta means one who is established. Viyukta means one who does not have. So one who is not having Raga Dvesha, such a person, Vishayan Indriyais Charan, but his Indriyas, his sense objects, stay in the sense, you know, his senses stay in the sense objects. His eyes are seeing, his ear. It's not that he's closing his eyes, ears, and living somewhere in the forest or in the Himalayas, not dealing with people, not living on fruits and vegetables. No, this person is walking through the world, functioning like you and me, dealing with objects, dealing with people, still remains without likes and dislikes. Why? Atma Vashya Videhi. So this person is under, has his mind under his control of his senses. Such a person is called Atma Vashya Videhi. Videhi, a person who has his sense organs under his control, his mind under the control of his intellect. And then what happens? Okay, if I go through all this and if I control my mind, then prasadam adhigachati, he reaches prasad. Here prasad, in what we are used to, is when we go to the temple and we sit down and we stay quiet and think about the Lord and do the puja, then the priest, the pujari, gives us some sweet or some prasad. So here what he means is the result of this action. Just as the result of going to a temple is to get sweets, so similarly practicing this knowledge gives us purity of mind, gives us great peace of mind, and that is the fruit. Prasada is the fruit. So let us spend a little bit time talking about these. So as we said, likes and dislikes, raga dvesha, means intense like and intense hatred. It does not mean that, like for example, a saint who is born in the south, like Raman Maharishi. Now he will eat idli and sambar. He won't eat Chinese food, he won't eat Italian. That is what he grew up with. It does not mean that he has a liking or he has hatred. That is how he lives his life. Now Ramakrishna Paramhans grew up in Bengal and he ate the food that people in Bengal eat. So that is not like or dislike, that is what they are used to doing. Or for example, a teacher is teaching a student music and he sings a horrible note and he's trying to teach him again, and then he will get angry. He will say, okay, you know, you, since you have not studied the note, you need to repeat it 50 times, for example. Now that is not dvesha. He's teaching the individual what is right and what is wrong. So that is not raga dvesha. Raga dvesha is where we perform injustice to others. To get this, I can, it doesn't matter how many people I hurt, how many people I cheat, and we go beyond the injunction of the scriptures. What the scriptures have taught us, we don't practice. So we do what we want to do, irrespective of what the world thinks. So that is called raga dvesha, where I violate the scriptures and even to the point of hurting others. So when he says charan, remember in the Arjuna's question, he says sita prajnasya kya bhasha samadhisthasya keshava sthitadi kim prabhashet kim asit vrajet kim. Vrajet means how does he, this wise person, move around in the world. So this verse will tell us an answer to the fourth question. Arjuna had asked four questions. How can we recognize a man of wisdom? How does he deal with others? How does he stay established in this knowledge? And how does he move about? So they say in life, you should have a two-way nervous system. Our nervous system is only one way. I run towards what I like, run, and run away from what I dislike. I'm constantly chasing after likes, running away from dislikes. So it's a one-way nervous system. This way only, running. So the teacher tells us that you need to have a two-way nervous system. Yes, there are things I like, there are things I dislike. There are people I like, people I dislike. I should be, my nervous system should move equally towards both. I should have equal love for all people. There are some I, what the point is that there should be nobody I dislike, because everybody has good and bad points. So see the person's good points. In my heart, I should have love for that individual or that particular activity. There is something I dislike doing and something I love to do. Do both cheerfully. In fact, when monks in the Buddhist monasteries are trained, they are specifically trained to do things they don't like. Like say there is a monk who needs loves to read, loves to meditate. They will tell him, go out in the garden and dig and plant trees. Go for a walk, you know, do some physical labor, cut wood and bring it for the monastery. And if somebody who loves to go out and do activity, they will say, sit down and meditate. It's not as a punishment, it's to train the mind that I should be fine in all kinds of activities. Things I enjoy doing, things I do not enjoy doing. As long as it is my duty, as long as it is the right thing, I should do it without likes or dislikes. And that is very, very important. Because situations will come where I have to do things I enjoy doing and things I do not enjoy doing. But I should be able to do both. I was thinking about your question last week. You know, how about your son likes to watch TV and your daughter loves to be on the cell phone. And then I talked to my two sons because they have children who are 6 and 4 and they have same, they're going through some discipline. So the answer I'll give you about likes and dislikes. So they said, first of all, you lead by example. Like we said, I have to shut off my TV. I have to shut off my cell phone. I cannot be on the phone and expect my daughter not to be. Secondly, they say set aside. And my children, their kids only watch TV on Friday night. It is very clear in the house that TV will only be watched on Friday night. The kids do not watch TV Monday to Thursday. Either they sit and tell them stories or play with them or do something. And it should be family time. So set aside 6 to 8 p.m. There'll be no TV, no cell phones. So make it a pact. So all of us will turn off our cell phones, plug the cell phone into the wall. Nobody who has cell phone in the house, no TV. And that time should be play time. You know, go out and play with the kids or sit down and play board games or talk to each other. Because for teenagers, the social interaction is very important. You know, that's how they connect with their kids, constantly on the cell phone. So teach them discipline that for 2 hours, there will be no cell phone in the house. Nobody will do it. And in return, let her invite her friends home on a Friday night. Okay, you can all come home, have pizza and watch movies, stay up till late. So you have to be friends with them and negotiate. But at the same time, some amount of discipline has to be in the house. At dinner time, everybody's on their own phone. So those things one has to. So likes and dislikes will be there, but we have to teach ourselves and our children that we always cannot do what we like. And then having some time out where we can talk, where we can interact. So I hope that answered a little bit. I did spend a lot of time talking to them and they gave actually very good answers. So I was quite thankful. So but what happens in our case, we forget. You know, I find something I like, I want to have more and more. And then I find something I dislike. Oh, why is it? And Gurudev Swami Chinmayananda always said that what you like will run away from you and what you dislike will come. And that invariably happens. What I like, I don't get. And what I dislike comes again and again. And we always forget. Talking about forget, this patient goes to the doctor and says, doctor, I have two problems. So doctor says, two problems, what? He says, one, I am very forgetful. And doctor says, what is the second? He says, what second? So we also forget what we are supposed to do. And that becomes the problem. So they say that doing what is causing injustice or hurtful to others or what is a violation of the scriptures is raga dvesha. But routine likes and dislikes everybody has. But insistence on a particular thing is wrong. Like for example, a girl likes to wear jeans and then her mother likes to wear saris. Now that is normal. There is nothing wrong with that. Mother wears saris, daughter wears jeans. But suppose there is a spiritual puja in the house or some, and then the daughter insists, no matter what you care, I don't care, I'm going to wear jeans. Now that is insistence. You know, so what the point is that there is certain things you are used to doing and certain things you don't do on a routine basis. But to insist, I don't care what the world thinks, I will do what I want as I wish, that is called raga and dvesha. So insisting on my, if it should be my way or the highway, when we do that, whether it's in our family, whether it's at our work, whether it's in relationships, there always has to be negotiation, there always has to be give and take. And the willingness to accept the other person's point of view. They, one very beautiful example I read was that both of you, say husband and wife, go to a restaurant and husband says, okay, today you order for me, for both of us. And then another time the wife, okay, you order. So the point is that to see what the other person likes and to be willing to accept and adjust is called raga dvesha. So free of raga dvesha is a person who moves around the world, deals with people, but is willing to accommodate to the other person's point of view. But a person, what in our case, what we have is we have 50 remote controls. There are 25 things I like, 25 things I don't like, 25 people I like, 25 people I don't like. So all of these have their remote, you know, when this person comes, I get unhappy. And when this person comes, I get happy. And when I see this, I get... So it's like 50 people are controlling my life. 50 people and 50 objects, for example, you can count. Some objects I like, some I don't like, some people. So imagine in one house, if there's one remote and three people want to operate, they say, I want to watch, kid wants to watch Disney, wife wants to watch something, you know, ZTV, and husband wants to watch sports. Imagine how much problem there'll be. One TV, one remote, three people. In our case, we have one TV and 50 remotes, 50 things and people controlling me that I like, I don't like. So a wise person, and Gurudev very brave, correctly, he said, do not put the remote control of your happiness in anybody else's pocket. Keep your remote control with you. What he means is do not let another person manipulate you where he can make you happy, he can make you happy. It could be a person, it could be a thing, it could be a job, it could be a position, it could be a situation, it could be a political situation, it could be the weather. I like heat, I don't like cold, I like Republicans, I don't like Democrats. Constantly, we are all the time, you know, so one person likes to exercise, other person likes to read, other person movies. I like to go to this movie, I like to go. So constantly we are under the influence of these things. So a person who is able to remain balanced and accept all situations as they are without getting agitated, without getting disturbed, and remaining peaceful, prasadam adhigacchati, he reaches the state of prasada, reaches the state of peace, reaches the state of happiness, reaches the state of joy. Just as when we go to temple and the priest gives us prasad, we don't argue, you know, why did he get more, why did he get less, I like this, I don't like this. Whatever we get, we say that it's the Lord's grace and we cheerfully accept and eat it. We don't argue with, you know, the priest, oh, I don't want this, give me that. No, whatever the Lord has given. So similarly in life, there will be situations which are good, which are bad. Accept them all as the Lord's prasad, as the Lord's grace, and cheerfully, happily move on. So this verse is being continued in verse number 65, where he will expand further on what happens when a person gets this prasada. Prasada buddhi means this equanimity of mind to accept all situations. So this prasada, one who gets this, what happens? These two verses talk about what happens when you do this, and then this talks about what happens when you do not do this. So verse number 65, prasade sarva dukkhanam hanirasyo pajayate प्रसन्न चेतसो ह्याशु बुद्धिः पर्यवतिष्ठते So what happens when we get this prasada, this peace, this equanimity, this willingness to accept situations as come to me without complaining? Prasade. So prasade means in prasada, the seventh case. In this prasada, when we have this situation where I am fine, I am peaceful, then what happens? Sarva dukkhanam, all sorrows. Hani, destruction. So all sorrows get destroyed in this individual's mind. One whose mind is peaceful, then there cannot be sorrow. We'll talk about that. Hanir asya upajayate. Then what happens? What arises in such a person's mind? When there is peace, there cannot be any sorrows. So this person is always happy. In all situations, he is peaceful, he is happy. And one who has such a peace of mind, prasanna chet saha, he ashu, soon, ashu means very soon, who has this kind of peace of mind and quietude, buddhi paryavatishtate, remains firmly established in wisdom. His intellect is firmly established in that state of joy. So, peace equals happiness. We all know that. There's not something I need to... Because when our mind is not at peace, either I'm angry or I'm jealous or I am wanting or I am desirous or hatred, I cannot never be happy. You cannot say I am peaceful and unhappy. And you cannot say I am agitated and happy. The moment I am agitated, whatever the situation may be, I automatically become unhappy. It's a given. There's nothing we need to explain. But if my mind is at peace, then only I'll be happy. I cannot be happy and agitated. Or I cannot be agitated and at peace. So peace equals happiness. So one who accepts situations as they are, deals with them without anger, loves all, can know doubt, be always happy, always peaceful. So all sorrows get destroyed. Now why do sorrows come in our mind? As we have talked many times, it is because of vasanas. Because of my selfish tendencies, Gurudev also says, it is my vasanas, it is my tendencies, it is my desires which give rise to anger, hatred, greed, jealousy, selfishness. And for such an individual whose mind is disturbed, then there cannot be any purity of mind. So one who has gone beyond vasanas, has destroyed his selfish tendencies, such a person's mind is pure because it is connected with the Lord. So the goal of spirituality is to reduce selfishness, reduce I and mine, and talk about we and ours. So and it can be start from the family, start from the home, and then extend it to the community, to the society, and then to the whole world, where yes, there will be things that are happening in the world. There will be people who are not good and people who are not bad, but in my mind there should be no hatred. Even if there is a child molester or is a mass murderer, or you know, let the Lord take care of him. In my mind there should be no hatred towards any community, towards any group, any people, but an attitude of love and acceptance. And ultimately, I have to understand that this world is just a play going on. And there are good and bad, just as in a movie, we have villains. And some of the villains in life are very good. I was told that Pran was one of the best people when you meet him personally, but played the worst role, you know, he raped the heroines and did every bad thing. Murdered and all, but in real life, so just as he is playing a role of a villain, but really, so same way I am playing a role, and let my mind be calm, and that can only happen when my intellect is above my mind. If the intellect is controlled by the mind decides, I feel like doing this, I don't feel like, and the senses say, you know, look at that nice suite, or look at that sari, or look at that jewelry, or look at that house, or look at that car, or that golf, I don't need it, but I run out and buy it, that is, the mind is controlling and the senses are controlling. But the intellect should decide, do I need it, do I not need it? Is it good for me? Is it bad for me? Is it good for my health? Is it bad for my health? So when the intellect controls the mind, then and then such a person's knowledge is available. That's what he says, that buddhi paryavatishthate, this person's wisdom is available to function. Otherwise, the wisdom gets stolen away. Bhagavan will talk next week. We'll talk about that, how this person's wisdom gets stolen away. So such a person, he has this knowledge. He has studied the scriptures. He has gone to the teacher. He has read the Bhagavad Gita. But when it comes time to practice, we don't do that. And that is our problem. Somebody told Gurudev, I've gone through the Bhagavad Gita 3 times. He says, you have gone through Bhagavad Gita 3 times. Has Bhagavad Gita gone through you? Have you studied the Bhagavad Gita? Have you applied that in your life? And that is called buddhi paryavatishthate. This such a person's knowledge is available when he needs it. That's what they say, when the rubber meets the road. When you are dealing in the world with people, that's when your wisdom is true. That how would the Gita act in this situation? How would Bhagavan Krishna act in this situation? How would Ramchandraji act in this situation? So all these great saints and these great prophets and the Lord himself, when they walked on earth, so that understanding, how would Jesus deal with this situation? That is how we should look at every situation and deal with people, as with that kind of wisdom. So they say, first start by controlling your senses. Right away, to control the mind may be difficult. You know, like I decide, like a person who drinks a lot, he says, from tomorrow I'm not going to drink or smoke or whatever I am very much attached to, from tomorrow I won't do it. So you start by controlling the senses, and then the control of the mind is possible. So the example I heard is that there is a guest in the house, and your child breaks some very expensive, you know, like some vase or something which you had bought from Italy, spent hundreds of dollars and was very precious, or, you know, something very dear, maybe God's statue or something, he drops and breaks it. Now your normal tendency would be to give him 2, right? Because he did that. But because a guest is there, so we have been taught that when a guest is in the house, you don't get angry. You have to behave. And somebody else is home. And so, you know, you become like Lord Shiva. You know, you control your anger, and then you very peacefully say, you know, it's okay, it broke. You pick it up, and inside you're very angry. And you want, and then afterwards you tell him, you know, tu bach gaya. You know, the guest was there. Otherwise, you... So we are taught from childhood that you have to control your behavior in front of others, in front of guests, or like in front of elders. Now there is somebody whom I respect a lot, or somebody who is, and that person comes home, or I have been bowing down to the person, then obviously, you know, you are on your best behavior. Like if Swamiji comes to our house and we have invited him for lunch or dinner, then obviously, So you start out by controlling your senses, not only in front of guests, but even at all situations. I should not get angry. I should be more peaceful. I should be more adjusting. I should be more loving. And then control of the mind is gradual. It happens slowly. Right away, you cannot say, oh, my mind even should not get disturbed. Yes, the mind will get disturbed, but as you control your senses, slowly your mind will realize that this individual is not going to be swayed by me. So gradually, you just as, say you are training a horse, you know, how the horse in the beginning is so wild and all, and then you gradually, you know, through training, through discipline, you control the horse. And, you know, same thing, you know, even dealing with, you know, difficult children or teenagers, it is a gradual process. So similarly, our mind, which is used to running out and doing whatever it pleases, and my senses are used to doing whatever they please, you gradually control them with your intellect, with your right understanding. Again, last week we had talked about not forceful suppression, but sublimation with right understanding, that this is right for me, this is good for me, therefore I'm doing it. Not I'm forcing my mind that I shouldn't look at it, I shouldn't see it, I shouldn't think it. But gradually turn your mind's attention from the world of objects towards the Lord and establish yourself in that wisdom. But do not be moody. See, you know, people say, my boss, he's so moody. You know, I don't know what mood he will be in today, whether he'll be angry. You know, if he has had a fight with his wife, he'll be, you know, a terror. But if, you know, things are going good at home, he's had a good breakfast. So we should not be under the influence of moods. You know, I feel like doing it, I don't feel like doing it. You know, especially kids or teenagers, we find they are very much under the influence. So I should not behave like that. So gradually I should control my mind, control my senses, because in our mind, this Kurukshetra war, it did happen. You know, there was this place called Kurukshetra, which was a very large kingdom, and it's all historical facts, that there was a huge kingdom called Kurukshetra where this war happened. It's not somebody just sat down and made it up, you know, just came up with their own. Vedvyasi didn't come up and imagine this whole Pandavas and Kauravas, and this is all historical facts. You know, Krishna was real, Ram. Some people say even Ramchandraji was not real, Krishna did not exist. It's all a poet's creation. It is not. It is all historical facts. But it is very symbolic, because in our mind there is a constant battle going on between the good and the evil. The Pandavas and the Kauravas are nothing but our own mind's tendencies, good tendencies and bad tendencies. And who wins? The Lord. If the Lord is with you, definitely success is guaranteed. Even though the Kauravas were 100, the Pandavas were 5, the Kauravas army was much larger, they had more equipment, better warriors, more money, everything. The Pandavas had much less, you know, I think 9 Akshohinis versus 16, something like that. They were far more in number, the regiments and all, but because the Lord was with them. So similarly, within us, there is a constant war going on between Raga and Dvesha. I like this, I don't like this, I want this, and love and hatred. So what wins? Where the Lord is. And obviously the Lord will be in our heart when we have love, we have compassion, when we have goodness. When we have anger, hatred, jealousy, then we are going away from the Lord. So that is verse number 65. Do we want to take a break here? Or maybe I'll finish verse number 66. And then we'll have about 15 or 20 minutes for any questions, any comments. Like I said, the first two verses are what happens to a person who has his sense organs under his control. Nasti buddhira yuktasya. Na chay yuktasya bhavana. Na cha bhavayata shantihi. Ashantasya kutasukham. So yukta and ayukta. Yukta means one who is established in this knowledge. Yukta means united. So whose mind and intellect are working together is called yukta. And the word yoga comes from the same thing. Yukta means coordinated, united individual. Ayukta means one whose mind and intellect are not united. Mind is doing something else, intellect is doing something else, body is doing something else, is called ayukta. So na asti. So there is not buddhi. Buddhi means wisdom for ayuktasya. So one who is ayukta, whose mind and intellect are not united, he has no wisdom. He has no true understanding. न च एंड न एंड नॉट अयुक्तस्य भावना. सो वन हुज माइंड इज नॉट यूनाइटेड हाउ कैन ही मेडिटेट. सो भावना मीन्स मेडिटेशन. सो फॉर मेडिटेशन और meditation, or you can say even to be established in this knowledge, what is meditation? There is three things: shravana, manana, nididhyasana. Shravana means I listen to the teachings from the guru, manana means I contemplate upon it, and nididhyasana means meditate upon it or abide in this knowledge. So a person who is ayukta, not only he has no wisdom, but he has no abidance, he has no quietude of mind, he has no stability of mind. And na cha abhavayata, and one who does not meditate, that's why meditation is emphasized in this verse, because Bhagwan in the 6th chapter will talk about meditation. So a person who does not meditate, who does not have this wisdom, na shanti hi, he cannot get shanti, he cannot get peace. And ashantasya kuta sukham. And one person who has no peace, how can he be happy? Kuta sukham. Sukham here means happiness. So as we said, ayukta means one who is not integrated. Mind and intellect are not integrated. And injunctions, he does not follow the scriptural injunctions. So such a person is called ayukta. It's like the four wheels. I was listening to another commentary. Very beautiful example. Suppose you have a car, right? And you want to drive, and one wheel goes here, one wheel goes there, and the back wheel goes this way, back fourth wheel goes. Will the car ever move? No. Car, because four wheels, they have to move in the same direction for the car to move. But that is how our life is. Our senses, our body runs towards senses. Our mind runs towards likes and dislikes, agitation. Our intellect has its own ideas, opinions. And then the poor Lord sitting within, he doesn't know what to do, because this person's body is, his senses are somewhere else. His mind is totally into running into likes and dislikes. His intellect is confused. So the Lord says, this person doesn't deserve a driver's license. You know, take away his license. That's how we run our life. You know, we run our life exactly like that person who has four wheels in four directions. And then we say, shanti nahi hai. You know, life mein, I have no peace. I have so much. Obviously, how can your life be peaceful when you're running in four different directions? And the Lord poor within is sitting and say, what am I going to do with this person? Look at him. He's so angry. He's so disturbed. He's so agitated. He's so miserable. The Lord cannot do anything. The Lord does not. The Lord basically gives us life, gives us the ability to function. He has given us a beautiful body, has given us a wonderful mind. That's why they say a beautiful mind. There was a movie, right, or a book, Beautiful Mind. And has given us such a brilliant intellect, you know, and then has given us the wisdom of the gurus. The Lord has done everything, made this beautiful world for us. And we still roam around so miserable and so unhappy. So the Lord says, you are on your own. If you are not going to follow what I have sent to the gurus and the teachers and the prophets, so many. That's why they said he sent his own son, you know, as Jesus. He sent his own prophets and teachers, and he himself came as Krishna and Rama to give us this knowledge. And if we still don't learn, then it is our fault. And then people all the time compare, you know, material joy and spiritual joy. You know, spiritual joy, who has seen? They always think that these spiritual people must be very boring. Spiritual life should be very boring. You don't do anything, sit in one corner and meditate. Oh, it's much better, you know, scotch P.O., you know, have a couple of drinks. Then you see that is true joy. What are you talking about? You mean you have never tasted alcohol? Your whole life is wasted. You know, people say things like that all the time. Are, you know, so people think that there is only joy in material things. But if you talk to the saints, they say that even one unit of spiritual joy is equal to millions of material joys. Ones who have experienced the joy of the self when you sit in meditation or when you sit in prayer and you enjoy that, then material joy has no comparison. And what gives us sorrows is, I have it and the other person doesn't have it. So I get pride. I don't have it and my neighbor has it. That gives me jealousy. Or I have it, but now it's giving me sorrow. And I see other people who don't have it are so much happier. So having and not having gives us joy. Or say I go to a party and I find out some people are talking about me, I get miserable. What are they saying about me? Or if I don't go to a party and then I ask, did anybody ask about me? I say, nobody did. You mean nobody, even the host didn't know. She was too busy, you know, taking. She didn't ask why you. So if people are talking about me, I'm happy. If they are not talking about me, I'm unhappy. Or somebody smiles at me. Why is she smiling? Something wrong with my face? And then if they don't smile, look at them. So we again, as we said, we let other people decide, you know, they say no. And why is all this happening? Because I think I am this body. The moment I think I am this body, then all the body's joys and sorrows and heat and cold and success and failure all will affect me. And Gurudev says, because such a person has no goal, just as in the olden days, now of course they have GPS, but in the olden days, sailors used to use the North Star, and they would use the North Star to guide them throughout in their journey. So similarly, our North Star is the spirituality goal. And so the scripture should be your star. Let the scriptures be your guide. Tasmat shastram pramanam te, Bhagavan says in the Bhagavad Gita. Have that as your goal and have firm faith in the teachings of the scriptures. Because the Lord or the prophets, whatever they have taught us, and people, you know, sometimes will say, you're going to the Bhagavad Gita class? What's wrong with you? Are you having any problems? That's what people think, that only people who have problems go to spiritual classes. I don't have any problem. I don't need to go. If you have problem, you can go. So that is the very standard thinking, you know, that only people who have difficulty, or they will tell others, you know what, you need to go. There's a Swamiji coming, you need to go ask him question. Are you, everybody needs to go. This knowledge is for all of us. But we have no faith in this knowledge. Or we have doubts. And they say doubts are good. You know, I doubt whether this thing will work. That's good. If you have a doubt, then you can clear it up. You can talk to a teacher. You can read the books. You can read. But if a person says, I have no doubts. I am fine the way I am. I don't need to change. I asked somebody. He was telling me, I need to change so-and-so's nature. I asked him, have you changed your nature? He said, I don't need to change my nature. I'm perfect as I am. Such a person, what can you do for him? Nothing. So we all have to understand that all of us have some defects, some difficulties, some problems. And in life, there is always room for improvement. If I am perfect, then I would be God. Then I would be Jesus. I would be Ram. I would be Krishna. But we all have imperfections, we all have problems, and it's okay to have doubts. It's okay to question the scriptures. There is nothing wrong. In fact, the entire Bhagavad Gita is built on question and answers. Arjuna asks the question, and then Krishna answers. And some places Arjuna says, I don't think this is valid, what you are saying. I don't see how it will be useful. In fact, the third chapter even starts with that. So many places the student disagrees with the teacher, and it is okay to do that as long as it is done with the right kind of doubt. You know, you ask the right question, it should be your own question, and it's okay to disagree, okay to question, okay to have doubts, because the idea is that only when we have doubts, then only our doubts will be cleared. And again, both joys and sorrows will both come in life, but welcome both. Joy came. Thank you, Lord, for giving me this joyful situation, this person, this job or this thing. And if sorrow came, as I have said before, sorrow is either a result of my past karmas, if you, that's how you can take it, or you can take it as sorrow is an opportunity for me to improve. That's why Kunti, the Pandava's mother, used to tell Krishna, always give me sorrow. Because when I have sorrow, I remember you. When I have joy, I don't. So they say, even in joy, remember the Lord. Even in sorrow, be grateful. Because this sorrow is an opportunity for me to improve. It is like a test. Just as when we go to the hospital, if we are not well, the doctor gives us a painful injection, but he's not doing it to punish us. He's doing it to get us well. Or if I have to have a painful surgery, which I am hospitalized for a week or 2 weeks, we know that it is what was required for me to get well. Say I have a ruptured appendix. If I don't operate, the doctor doesn't operate within a few hours, I won't survive. So similarly, the Lord, when there are sorrows, you take it as an opportunity to get well, opportunity to improve. So welcome joys and sorrows equally. Joys come, very good. Sorrow came, even better. If that attitude, we can work in the world. That's what Bhagavan says. Raga dosha, raga dvesha viyuktaistu vishayan indriyaischaran. Both are there. This person happily walks through life, facing both joys and sorrows. Works through the world, love with all. Such a person gets peace, gets happiness, prasada. And once you get this prasada, then your mind is established in the wisdom. You have happiness, you have joy. But if we don't, if we work disintegrated, then there is sorrow and there is suffering. So that is the essence of these three verses. Very, very practical, very useful teaching from the Lord. And then, of course, Gurudev, whose commentary, you know, you all have. So please read that. Any comments? Yeah.
Over time, you should learn to be strong that anybody should not affect you, whether it's your friends, your family. It's usually more your family than
right,
anyone.
Right, right.
Because you are more connected with your family than anybody else in your life.
Yeah, especially for a mother. It's very difficult, and you know, it's not easy being a mother, because you know, this is somebody you have carried, you know, for 9 months, and then you have, you know, from childhood you have fed them and taught them to walk and taught them to talk and everything. But I think if I say this is my child, then it will affect me. But if I say this is God's child, whom God has given me to take care of, then I'll do the best for this child, but without thinking it is my child. Like if it's my house and if something breaks, I get very affected. But if I'm living in a rental house and something breaks, I'm not affected. I tell the landlord, come and fix it, right? So similarly, if I think that this is my child and I am responsible, then obviously the child's success and failure will affect me. But if I say God is living in my house and this is God's child, then I'll still love the child equally, but then it's not mine. Suppose the child is doing well, you are doing well. If the child is not doing well, you didn't. Again, does not mean that I don't take responsibility. I do the best for my child, but without this ownership of I and mine. That's number one. It's not my child. Even though I gave birth to the child, it is God's gift to me. So I do my best to do whatever is best for the child. If it works out good or bad, everybody comes with their own vasanas, their own tendencies. I cannot change anybody else. I can only change myself. That's number one. Number two, if I am established in the wisdom, buddhi paryavatishtate, then inside I will not be disturbed. Yes, it's not that I become a stone. If my child is crying, I don't say, let him cry. No, I go and pet him as much as I can. I take care of him. Suppose tomorrow my daughter goes to college and something bad happens with her boyfriend and, you know, she's crying and all. Obviously, as a mother, I will feel. But inside, I should be calm and say, okay, you know, this is, everybody's born with their own destiny. Everybody comes with their own karmas. But the more I listen to this knowledge, the more firmly I get established in this knowledge, the less the situations will disturb. That's why Gurudev used to say, be like a rock, not like a log of wood. A log of wood goes up and down with the water, but a lighthouse, remains firmly established in its wisdom, no matter how many rocks come, the lighthouse cannot disturb. Not only that, but the lighthouse becomes a source of guidance for all. So as a mother, I should be calm inside. I should be loving and compassionate and let people go through their moods of joys and sorrows and all. But I should be a source of lighthouse. I should be a source of wisdom to my family, to my children, because being a mother is a great responsibility, and it is really a blessing to have that. That's what, you know, to be able to bring an individual into the world and be responsible. So be grateful to the Lord for giving, instead of saying, why am I a woman and I have to go through pregnancy and this and that and all. It is really a blessing to be a woman, to, you know, to give birth to another human being is a great, great privilege, I would say. So accept it cheerfully and do your best, and then ultimately leave it to Him. Bhagwan, tere bachche hain, tu sambhal. I did my best. It is your children. You take care of them. And husband and situations will affect. But inside, if I am calm and peaceful, if there is some storm raging, you know, suppose there is a big storm going on, I don't try to go fight the storm. I just close my doors and stay for a while and let the storm end, and then I'll be peaceful again. So keep the doors of your mind established in the Lord at all times. When things are not going well, just chant His name. You know, just Shri Krishna, Ram, Shri Ram. And just chant the name of the Lord and be peaceful and always be established in this wisdom. The more you listen to this knowledge, the more it becomes part of your thinking. So gradual, it's a gradual process. It's not going to happen overnight. But slowly, slowly, this wisdom will make its ghar bana leta na, like it makes your mind its home. And that's what I think. I don't know whether I was
able. Okay, so when you have children and your husband, their happiness is going to influence your happiness.
Right.
Yeah, you can say that, okay, let's leave it up to God. Let them be. God will take care of them. That I understand. But what I don't understand is how can you justify if your children, for any reason, are unhappy, that it will not influence you?
No, it will influence you,
or
because
your
husband. Right, because you are very connected to them.
Right.
But there is a... One is that you share in their joy and sorrow. One is that you yourself start crying with them, where you become more depressed than them and make the situation worse.
Mm-hmm.
So that is attachment.
Mm-hmm.
The idea should be that I should become a source of, become like a lighthouse, where yes, the waves will come, but I should be a source of wisdom for and calmness. And if I also start getting disturbed, then I'm going to make the situation worse. So I remain calm, I remain peaceful, I remain, you know, and share in their joys and sorrows. Obviously, none of us are stones. But if you look at the saints' lives, for others they had extreme compassion, for themselves they had strength. So when things are going wrong with me, I am calm. When somebody else is going wrong, I go and offer my support and solace. So with themselves, they are very strong. Something is hurting, it's okay. Even cancer, they were not affected. It's happening to the body. It's not happening to me. It's happening to the mind. It's not happening to me. As long as I think I am the body, mind and intellect, I will suffer. If I say I am Atma, I am conscious. That's why the second chapter, Bhagavan right away said, you are Atma, you are consciousness, you are not this BMI. If I say I am that, then I deal with situations as required. Whatever is required. But inside, my mind is always established in the Lord, because I am not. I'm just playing the role of a mother. I am really not mother. I am Atma or consciousness, playing the role of a mother and doing whatever is required. What I need for my husband, for my children, for my home, for everything I do. But inside, I know I am Atma. Second chapter starts with that. He says, you are that which never changes, which never dies. Then why are you unhappy? Because I never die. I was never born, so I will never die. This body will die, so what? Mind will go through joys and sorrows. So what? I am not the mind. I just watch the mind. Okay, today you are unhappy. Oh, okay, that's fine. Go ahead, be unhappy. Today you are happy. That's good too. But I watch both. So start being a witness of the mind. Start watching the mind. Instead of getting involved in the mind. And that's what we teach in meditation. So through regular meditation, you are able to watch the mind as a witness. And then mind will have its joys and sorrows. But I remain calm inside and I deal with situations as they are. We're not saying you become a stone. In fact, a wise person is more loving, more compassionate, because his love and compassion is not only for his child or his for everybody. So spread your wisdom. And then also, I think, be a karma yogi. I'm doing God's work. It's not my work. Lord, it is your work. I am just doing it. Wherever you're, like an actor, wherever the director puts me, I do the role to the best of my ability. If I have to play a mother's role, I be the best mother ever. But no, love, we are not saying don't have love and compassion. In fact, you have more love and compassion when somebody is angry. You feel sorry for that individual instead of getting more angry. Yes.
You know how you said that, like, if your body is, like, if you are sick, your body is suffering. So, and if your mind is happy or unhappy, but how do you distinguish I from your body and mind? I mean, if your body is suffering, you will be in pain, right? How can you distinguish I from your mind that must? I'm unhappy, but how can you distinguish that?
No, the nature of the body is it will be in pain. It's not always going to be fine. I am going to get old. I'm going to get hurt. I'm going to have back problems. I'm going to have joint problems. I'm going to have all these things will happen, God forbid. But so that is the one day it will be sick. One day it will be healthy. That is the nature of the body. If I'm sick, I go take medicine. And if I can't take medicine, if it is an incurable illness, I just accept it. But you say it's happening to the body, not happening to me, number one. Number two, do not let the pain or the discomfort of the body stop you from doing what you are supposed to do. And a mother is very good at that. Even if she is in pain, even if she has a fever, she will get up at 6 o'clock in the morning, cook for her children, send them to school. Don't they do that? So that is called going beyond the body. She has a fever of 102. She will take 2 Tylenol, do her duty. Once the children goes to school, then she will collapse. I'm in so much pain. At that time, she forgets her pain. So that is how one, like an Olympic athlete, he's in so much pain and he's running the marathon, but he has to win the gold medal. His joints are aching and he can't move, but every ounce of energy, that is called going beyond the body. Do what you are supposed to do. Do not let bodily discomfort stop you from doing what you are supposed to do, your duty. Otherwise, you'll become a slave of the body. I don't feel like doing this. Or you'll become a slave of the mind. I don't feel like doing it. Or my body is hurting. It's hurting, take Tylenol, but do what you are supposed to do. So bodily discomforts are going to happen to everybody. You're going to have surgery. You're going to have problem with diabetes or blood pressure or arthritis or stroke. These all will happen. But am I going to let it affect me or am I going to overcome the illness? Om Sarve Bhavantu Sukhinah, Sarve Santu Niramaya, Sarve Bhadrani Pashyantu, Ma Kashchit Dukha Bhag Bhavet. Om Shanti Shanti Shanti. Hari Om Shri Gurubhyo. Hari Om. Thank you.